From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The new party leader of South Africa's ruling African National Congress, Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, is promising to tackle corruption and implement radical economic transformation to speed up expropriation of land without compensation.
It has also been resolved that in implementing this decision, we must ensure that we do not undermine the economy, the agricultural production, and food security in our country.
The 65-year-old Ramaphosa, narrowly elected to the post Monday, said graft must be confronted with the same intensity as poverty, unemployment, and inequality. The current Jacob Zuma administration has been plagued by scandal and charges of mismanagement. Council on Foreign Relations Africa expert John Campbell said both issues have been around since the ANC came to power. Following the end of apartheid, he expects expropriation to be a non-starter.
And that is because the Constitution, of which Ramaphosa was one of the architects, guarantees the right of private property. So that wholesale expropriation is not possible.
Since the ANC has ruled the country since 1994, Ramaphosa is widely seen as the next South African president in 2019, although the ANC suffered local election setbacks last year. In Yemen, the Saudi-led coalition kept up the pace of airstrikes Wednesday, a day after Houthi rebels fired another missile toward the Saudi capital. That rocket was intercepted and destroyed. There were no casualties. Saudi King Salman spoke about the incident with President Donald Trump. Riyadh believes Iran is supplying missiles to the rebels, a charge Tehran denies. The coalition also said it's going to keep the rebel-held port of Hodeidah open for humanitarian supplies. This is VOA News. President Trump hailed what he called a historic victory Wednesday as the Republican-led Congress passed a major $1.5 trillion tax overhaul measure in what's viewed as Mr. Trump's first legislative victory in his 11-month administration.
This is going to mean companies are going to be coming back. You know, I campaigned on the fact that we're not going to lose our companies anymore. They're going to stay in our country. And that means jobs. And it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies. So that's going to be very, very important.
The vote was almost entirely along partisan lines, with Democrats charging it benefits the wealthy and will widen the national debt. Nancy Pelosi is the House Minority Leader.
They cheered a bill that will raise taxes on 86 million middle-class families and hand a staggering 83% of its tax cuts to the wealthiest 1%.
The measure is viewed as the most sweeping tax overhaul in 30 years. The measure slashes corporate taxes from 35 to 21% and the highest individual income tax rate to 37 from 39.6. It's expected to balloon the U.S. national debt by at least $1 trillion over 10 years. Mr. Trump Wednesday threatened to cut financial aid to countries that vote in favor of a draft U.N. resolution that calls on the U.S. to reverse its decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
This isn't like it used to be where they could vote against you and then you pay them hundreds of millions of dollars and nobody knows what they're doing. People are tired of the United States. The people that live here are great citizens that love this country. They're tired of this country being taken advantage of, and we're not going to be taken advantage of any longer.
The vote, brought by Arab and Muslim countries, is scheduled Thursday in a special session of the U.N. General Assembly after the U.S. cast a veto of the similar measure Monday in the Security Council. Ugandan lawmakers voted overwhelmingly late Wednesday to amend the country constitution to allow 73-year-old President Yoweri Museveni to extend his rule. Some opposition lawmakers who opposed the measure were dragged away and detained when they tried to enter parliament. The final vote was 315 to 62 in favor. The 73-year-old Museveni, who has ruled since 1986, is guaranteed a lifetime presidency. The UN Independent Investigator for Human Rights in Myanmar, also known as Burma, has been barred from entering the country for the remainder of her tenure. Yang He Lee, who had been scheduled to visit in January, said some awful thing is happening. She has called for stronger international pressure on military commanders in the wake of a crackdown on Rohingya Muslims. Six aid workers of a French organization kidnapped by rebels in South Sudan have been released. They were abducted Sunday while traveling near the town of Raja. It's not clear why they were taken. The European Union is threatening member state Poland with sanctions over implementation of judicial reforms that Brussels warns threatens democracy. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan warring factions meeting in Addis Ababa worked late into the night without reaching a ceasefire agreement.
The government delegation is arguing that South Sudan is a sovereign state. It should not be prevented from acquiring arms at any time it wants to.
That's VOA's John Tanza in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. A new report accuses the DRC government and its allied militias of committing atrocities in Kasai province. Togo's opposition coalition is planning fresh new protests despite calls for a dialogue. And Zimbabwe's new president addresses the nation on wide-ranging issues, including the economy.
My government is committed to open Zimbabwe up to investment by building a free and transparent economy which benefits Zimbabweans and is welcoming outsiders.
Meanwhile, the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe says the U.S. is open to supporting the new government depending on what the government does and the healing powers of music. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. More than 100 members representing various South Sudan warring factions meeting in Addis Ababa worked late into the night without reaching a ceasefire agreement. The gathering is sponsored by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, and it aims at revitalizing the 2015 peace agreement. Reporter John Tanza of VOA's Sudan in Focus program is covering the forum in Addis Ababa. He says the delegates could not reach a consensus on some key issues in the draft permanent ceasefire document.
The latest is that the stakeholders to the South Sudan Revitalization Forum have not signed the ceasefire agreement that they were supposed to have ended up discussing. I mean, the agreement on cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians and humanitarian access in South Sudan was supposed to be the basis of starting these negotiations. And the delegates were locked up from 12 midday Wednesday in a meeting, and they didn't come out until around 6 in the evening, and they went back again at around 8:30 p.m. And I left the venue at around 12:30 a.m. this morning, and they have not signed any document.
What do you think is the reason for the inability to come to an agreement? What are the reasons?
Now, the reasons are there's Article 3 in the agreement which talks about the obligations of the parties under the cessation of hostilities. Now, if you go to Article 3, Section E, it says that there will be no illegal acquisition of weapons and armaments during the cessation of hostilities. The government delegation is arguing that South Sudan is a sovereign state. It should not be prevented from acquiring arms at any time it wants to. Another sticking point was the opposition was requesting that the CITESAM is a monitoring body that's mandated by the 2015 peace agreement to report and monitor cases of violations. And so the opposition groups were requesting that CITESAM should be based outside South Sudan because they are saying having CITESAM based in Juba, it's under the mercy of the government because the government will control the monitors. The government will fit to give the monitors access whenever they feel like. So the opposition was demanding that CITESAM should be relocated out of South Sudan. But it looks like that area was resolved. But one of the sticking points here is the issue of purchasing of arms and ammunition.
John, I mean, I listened to your report sent in on Tuesday, and it seems to me all the civil society people attending, the issue of cessation of hostilities was very important to them. From where you sit, observing this meeting, do you think the delegates will be able to iron out their differences?
I think it's fair to say that the differences that have emerged of late just minor issues, but, you know, they are important to both parties. The government is insisting that the agreement should not prohibit their ability to run the country as they see fit. And the opposition is saying if you are signing a cessation of hostilities, you have to abide by its rules. But the overall assessment is that the two parties, the opposition groups and the government delegation, have all agreed that there is a need for cessation of hostilities, there is a need for ending the violence. But how is the $1 million question? Because if you look at this document on the cessation of hostilities and protection of civilians and humanitarian access, it's a beautiful document, but as they say, the devil is in the details.
John Tanza, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you. We look forward to speaking with you again tomorrow.
My pleasure, James Buddy.
First reporter John Tanza of VOA Sudan in Focus program covering the Addis Ababa Forum of South Sudan Warring Factions. A new report by the International Federation for Human Rights has accused the DRC government and its allied militias of committing atrocities in Kasai province. The group said it based its conclusion on testimonies it gathered last July from Congolese refugees who fled the Kamanian territory in the Kasai province to Angola. The group calls on the DRC government to put an end to what it calls human rights violations in Kasai and to conduct an independent investigation into the alleged crimes and bring those responsible to justice. The DRC government was not immediately available to respond to the allegations. Cleophas Katumba is a Congolese analyst from the Kasai province. He says if possible, the International Federation for Human Rights plans to take this case to the International Criminal Court.
The conclusion of the report is about that the government forces and the militias, Kamuina Sapu, and they've committed serious crimes in the province of Kasai, specifically in the Kamanya town.
How do you know the government committed those crimes?
Yeah, the FIDH, which is a human rights organization, the headquarters based in France, in Paris, they went to Angola and spoke to the refugees, those who fled the conflict in Kasai. So they spoke to the victims, and the statement made by the victims, they've come to the conclusion that the government and those militias, they've committed crime against humanity.
So you interview people who left the DRC and went to Angola?
Yeah, those people were interviewed by the FIDH, which is the Federation International for Droit de l'Homme, in French, acronym. So they spoke to them. I was not part of that team, but in some way I collaborated with that team. But I am an analyst from Congo, and my origin is from the Kasai region.
We have spoken many times with the Congolese Minister of Information, and when you talk about the Kasai region, the government indicates that it is fighting rebels in that area. What do you say to that?
What I know that the Kamuina Nsapu militias, they were not really rebel in per se. These people, they started to protest against the government because the government was taking side in a traditional conflict. So the government took side and they were not happy. They were fighting official from the government. But when you look the sort of the weapon they used and what the government has used, there is no common measure between those weapons. So calling them rebels, I think it's kind of exaggeration.
What do you hope to come out of this report?
I think the International Federation of Human Rights, which is based in Paris here, they want first to really inform people based on the statement made by the victims, what really took place in Kasai. Secondly, they wanted to really inform the international community and the Congolese that there were crime against humanity were committed in Kasai, and also they are planning to go to take this case to the ICC.
To the ICC against the government of the DRC?
Against the government and the militias as well.
Cleophas Katumba is a Congolese analyst from the Kasai province. He was speaking with me from the French capital, Paris. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 21st. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Wednesday vowed to ensure the rule of law, fight corruption, enact laws that attract investors, and conduct free and fair elections next year. But, as Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA, the opposition says the country's new president and his government are no different from the old regime of Robert Mugabe.
President Mnangagwa pledged that Zimbabwe would unveil a, quote, robust, unquote, re-engagement policy and open up to foreign investment as he delivered his first State of the Nation address since taking office about a month ago. The president's remarks come as he prepares to head South Africa Thursday to meet with the potential investors. Mnangagwa also sought to reassure Zimbabweans about the integrity of elections expected in 2018.
My government is committed to entrenching a democratic society driven by respect for the Constitution, the rule of law, mutual tolerance, peace and unity. To this end, government will do all in its power to ensure that the 2018 harmonized general elections are credible, free and fair.
However, the president's special advisor, Christopher Mchangwa, told the media last weekend that the ruling ZANU-PF party would use the military to ensure victory next year. The International Commission of Jurists told VOA that Mnangagwa, who came into power on the back of the army, must not rely on the military for policing Zimbabweans as the country prepares for the elections. Tendai Biti is a member of the opposition People's Democratic Party and former finance minister. He says many Zimbabweans are worried about the military's involvement in politics and that Mnangagwa's cabinet had been, quote, militarized, unquote, by having two retired generals, including the one who announced that the army, quote, had taken over, unquote, state institutions.
We have nothing per se against the military, but we know that the essence of the rule of law and constitutionalism is that of democracy, and democracy is government for the people and by the people. And so the people that are ultimately decisive in our country are the ordinary citizens who have the right to choose men and women who will serve them. You cannot make a transition from a barrack to a public office. So we are concerned about that.
Nelson Chamisa, the vice president of the main opposition party, Movement for Democratic Change, says the new government has nothing to offer Zimbabweans.
We are not only confident, we don't only believe that we will form the next government. We know it. And Mr. Mnangagwa knows it. We are going to be the next government. This is why they are panicking. But we are saying even if you form the next government, it's going to be a good dispensation for Mr. Mnangagwa and his team, because we'll be very inclusive, tolerant of the opposition.
President Mnangagwa is expected to appoint former head of the army, Constantino Chiwenga, as his vice president after retiring him this week, quote, pending redeployment, unquote. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe says the U.S. is open to supporting the new government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, depending on what that government does in terms of holding free and fair elections, upholding freedom of speech, and especially providing jobs for Zimbabweans. Ambassador Harry Thomas Jr. says any decision to lift U.S. sanctions on Zimbabwe will be made based on the performance of the Mnangagwa government.
We think that people want free and fair elections. They want freedom of speech. Most importantly, they want jobs. They want cash, the ability to pay tuition for their children, take their families on vacations, and have opportunity. So we very much are supportive of the new Zimbabwe.
But do you see the new government delivering that?
It's too early to say. And that's just a fair assessment. They haven't had much time in office. The finance minister delivered his budget speech last week. President Mnangagwa gave his State of the Nation address today. It's too early to tell, but we are heartened by the promises both made in terms of what they want to do on the economic side.
So, Ambassador, from what has happened, because there have been this talk about the too much involvement of the military, of course they've said they're going back into the barracks, but people are still saying that this is like some kind of military junta. What do you make of the new government?
We want to give the new government a chance, as do the Zimbabwean people. We want to see if they are able to provide jobs, health care, educational opportunities. And we're going to take them at their word because they promised all of this. Mm-hmm. And that is something we support. We want to see this done in accordance with your wonderful 2013 Constitution. Nothing could be better for the Zimbabwean people. But it takes time. The economy is in tatters. To turn around an economy in a short time will be a Herculean task. But we want to show them that American investors, American companies are interested in Zimbabwe, given the right challenges. After all, Pepsi Cola just opened. Pizza Hut is going to open after Christmas. Mm-hmm. American businesses are very, very interested in the opportunities they will have in Zimbabwe.
Maybe the main question that Zimbabweans and all those who are listening is about the issue of sanctions. Mm-hmm. Because the Zimbabwean government, the previous leadership and the present, they are all talking of one thing, mm-hmm. that the sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe, mm-hmm. or those targeted sanctions mm-hmm. imposed on some Zimbabwean leaders, is impeding development in Zimbabwe. What is the U.S. going to do about this?
Well, as you know, sanctions and that issue for the United States government and other governments are up to our president and our legislature. Mm-hmm. What we have told the Zimbabweans is they need to lobby our legislature, lobby our executive branch. But any decision on those issues are going to be made based on performance. And so it's very important that elections be free and fair and nonviolent, as President Mnangagwa has promised. Very important that he end corruption, as he has promised.
Harry Thomas Jr. is the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe. He spoke with reporter Chris Gandhi of VIEW's Studio 7 Zimbabwe program. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says it is planning 3 days of fresh protests on December 27th, 28th, and 30th. The parties are demanding a return to Togo's 1992 constitution, which calls for a 2-5-year term limit for presidents and also for President Faure Gnassingbé's resignation. The renewed protests come despite a call by West African leaders last week for the Togolese government and the opposition to hold inclusive dialogue. The protests also come after the government said last week it released 24 opposition prisoners. Kojo Delava is Secretary General of Togo's main opposition National Alliance for Change Party. He says the government must free political prisoners and withdraw its army from key cities to allow the citizens there to participate in the protests.
We resume next week. We will be protesting and demonstrating this coming Wednesday, Tuesday, and Saturday. That is on the 27th, 28th, and 30th of this December. On 29th, which is a Friday, we request everybody to stay home and to make as much as noise as possible, gongoning anything we can do to make noise in the city.
At the end of the ECOWAS meeting last week, the West African leaders called on you, the opposition, and the Togolese government to hold what they called inclusive dialogue. Why are you continuing protest when you are supposed to be holding dialogue?
Well, what we can what come out from this meeting is putting everybody is a request. The ECOWAS meeting called Togolese people to talk and to compromise. But there are some preliminaries to before the talks begin. That is, it means free all the political prisoners and also make the army to pull back from the cities as Sokode, Bafilo and Mango. Those cities are under military occupation, and people are not free there to demonstrate or to participate to any public manifestation, any demonstration they can. So we want all those preliminaries to be done by the government so that the talks can take place in a peaceful atmosphere.
But I did speak with the spokesperson for the government, Mr. Bawara, and he indicated to me last week that to date, the government has freed about 24 opposition members, including two imams. Isn't that sufficient for a dialogue to begin?
This is not sufficient because many people still remains to be free. And we don't know why the government will not free everybody. All those opposition people who still are detainees, who still are in the government prison, should be free. That's what everybody claims. Four talks can begin. That's all. And also, what the militaries are looking for in these three cities I mentioned before.
Kojo Delava is the Secretary General of Togo's May Opposition National Alliance for Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Music have charms, the saying goes, and it does have power to make us happy, sad, or even ignite social change. But it is also a healing power, and researchers want to know how that works. Viewer's Kevin Enochs reports.
The soothing sounds of a violin and the graceful movements of dancers can help take people's minds off painful hospital procedures like chemotherapy.
It reduces anxiety, and it can also help decrease the amount of medication that a patient needs.
Researchers at the National Institutes of Health are studying how exactly music affects the body.
If we can study the arts in the same way that science studies medications and other therapeutics, I think we will be doing so much good for cura personalis, or care of the whole person.
This here opera singer Renee Fleming is part of the study, working with researcher David Jangraw.
If you really want to engage certain parts of the brain, you have to get the person to actually sing along or play an instrument or become part of the music-making process.
Fleming underwent brain scans while speaking, singing, or imagining a piece of music. What researchers discovered is that processing music is an incredibly complex process, and imagining music may be even more complicated. And that music may be a pathway to engage parts of the brain and speed up the healing process.
What neuroscience can do is help us understand which parts of the brain are active when we're making music. And if we find out that that part of the brain is also affected by a disease or a disorder or an injury, now we know that music can be a part of the solution to helping that part of the brain.
But beyond healing, learning or playing music keeps the brain sharp, improves kids' language skills, and helps improve grades. Kevin Enochs, VOA News.
And that's it for this Thursday, December 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.